Community Radio.
It's about real people.
Not sound bites.
Not more talking heads.
Not on this show.
Interchange is a community access media forum fostering unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Conversations that challenge the ways we perceive the world around us.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Good evening and welcome to Interchange. My name is Lisa Marie Napoli and I will be the host for this evening's show. I'm delighted to introduce two guests we have in the studio this evening. We have Yvette Alex Asenso. Yvette, who identifies herself as a political scientist, attorney, licensed family mediator, and author, currently serves as the Dean of the Office for Women's Affairs at Indiana University Bloomington. She has also authored numerous books, and her research has been funded by numerous prestigious foundations, including the National Science Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Council for the International Exchange of Scholars, the Spencer Foundation of Chicago, and the National Academy of Education. We also have Maren Pink here with us in the studio. She was educated at the University of Leipzig in Germany, where she received a PhD in chemistry in 1997. She is currently a senior scientist in the Department of Chemistry and the director of the Indiana University Molecular Structure Center. She currently serves as the chair of the advisory board for the Women in Science program of the Office for Women's Affairs and focuses on attracting and retaining women in science professions. She is the mother of a 23-month-old boy and in training to become a Leche League leader. So thank you both for being here this evening with us.
Hello.
Thank you.
Great. And it's Women's History Month, and it's wonderful to have women in the station, especially those doing the service and the work for the Office for Women's Affairs. So again, it's a pleasure to be here with you. I thought a good starting place would be to talk about the office for a few minutes, the Office for Women's Affairs, and I have in front of me here your vision statement, what you're striving to help Indiana University become. And I thought perhaps I could start reading that and you can respond with perhaps how you start to serve that mission and start to serve that vision, pardon me, and the mission that you use to accomplish it. So I'm reading here, the vision for the Office of Women's Affairs. We envision Indiana University as a community of women and men who respect and affirm one another in healthy and violence-free relationships. In our community, access to equal opportunity for women and men of all backgrounds inspires the best research, teaching, service, leadership, and entrepreneurship so that new knowledge and abundance are created, suffering is alleviated, and well-being is exported around the globe. Quite a beautiful vision with a lot of amazing reverberations. So, Yvette, would you like to comment on the work and how you're able to meet such an aspiring vision?
Sure. Well, it's important to state that as a unit at Indiana University, we have to be in compliance or in alignment with the university mission. And as a university, we are very much focused on research and teaching and service to the larger community. So if you notice, the vision is very much about that as sort of the middle ground. And then we work backwards to see how we are able to facilitate that mission and then forward in terms of the impact of that mission, not only on campus, but in society at large, because universities were established to be headlights for society, not just to create knowledge so that it can be in journals and books. That's important. Mm-hmm. But it's also important that that research and that teaching and that service has an impact. And so that's where we talk about the society and making sure that it has a role in alleviating suffering and creating new knowledge and those kinds of things.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And the range of topics and issues that you have to deal with, I'm sure, are immense. How do you find a way to narrow them down and choose specific programs to be able to fulfill that aspiration?
Certainly. So we go back then to the three prongs of the university mission: service, teaching, and research. So with research, we're focused on faculty and with students. And so we have the Women in Science program, and Maren will talk to you about that later. We also have various issues focusing on the recruitment of faculty and the retention of faculty, so that deals with climate issues, workshops, tenure and promotion kinds of things, mentoring policies. All of those things flow from the research mission. We're also concerned about teaching, and with that, we are concerned about what goes on in the classroom, but as well as our students. And so our students come into that teaching focus, whereby we make sure that students are safe and that they are empowered. And so another important aspect of our mission is not only focusing on faculty and helping them with teaching, but also with students. And for the first time in Indiana University's history, we have been able to facilitate a program. It's an online educational program that will allow all freshmen and transfer students to take a sexual education awareness course. And they have to take that course or else they can't register. And what that course ensures is that they have an understanding of what sexual assault is, how it's prevented, what happens to people who engage in it, for people who have survived sexual assault, the kinds of resources that are available on campus. So everyone comes to the university community with an understanding of this is the way that we are to behave. We are a community of people involved in education, and we need to treat one another with respect. And I think that's really important, and it actually brings the university at par with other Big Ten universities, which already have these programs in place.
Mm-hmm. Great. And do you find that awareness of the young freshmen that, you know, get exposed to this program, do you find that has an impact on them differently as compared to students who've gone through before and haven't experienced the program?
Well, it's important to say that two things. The first is that just at the beginning of the year, I had an opportunity to sit in a group of students who didn't know who I was at the time, and they were talking about this program that they had to go through and how neat it was, and they didn't know certain things about sexual assault. It was really, really exciting for me to hear them talk about it in such a favorable way, because the first thing you think about when you tell students you have to do something is that they're going to rebel and think, oh, you know, this is crazy, whatever. But actually, they learned something, and it was important. I remember one woman saying, I didn't know all of that about sexual assault. And then with our peer education, one of the responses was that everybody needs to go through this particular workshop. We have a Savant peer education program, which is also in keeping with the sort of focus on reducing, eliminating sexual assault on campus. And the business school has been a really good partner, the College of Arts and Science, School of Education. Many of our partners on campus have been really good and faculty members in allowing our Savant peer educators to come in and educate across a range of issues, ethics, sexual assault, preventing those kinds of things, how to build healthy relationships, a variety of different workshops. And last year, they won 3 awards for their work on campus. And so that goes to show that when students are involved in empowering and educating others, they really can have an important impact. And so those two programs, I think, go back to the teaching mission. And with respect to service, everything we do with respect to advocacy on campus with the deans and the chairs and faculty, and also working in the community with, for example, the Commission on the Status of Women in Bloomington and the Monroe County Commission on Women, as well as with Man Up and with RAISE and the Monroe County Prosecutor's Office, all of those things are part of the service that we render by providing the community with an understanding of the status of women, of the best practices in eliminating violence, of how to empower and to create the kind of climate where women can contribute their best in ways that advance not only the university but society at large.
Great. I definitely want to hear more about how you reach out to the community and do that work. But before, I want to stay sort of on campus, because sure. I'd like to talk to Maren a little bit about the program that she is the chair for on the advisory board with the Women in Science program. So I know that's a very significant program from the Office for Women's Affairs. And Maren, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about that.
So the Women in Science program is now nearly 2 decades old. It was founded in 1993 by then Dean Julia Lumber. And our mission is really to attract and encourage advanced women at all levels in their career into the science and tech fields. We have an advisory board that is comprised of faculty members, graduate students, and postdocs, and really all science and computing and math departments of Bloomington are involved in this effort. And we have several flagship events that we are conducting on campus several initiatives. One of them is a Women in Science Research Conference, which just happened in March. And this year we had really an astounding representation of many fields and 150 registered students. We typically have 70 to 80 faculty and postdoc judges. And this workshop provides women in the sciences and in the humanities with a, these are graduate and undergraduate students, I should say, with a beautiful opportunity to network across disciplines and to, in a comfortable environment, present their research and test out their knowledge and see how they come across, right? So also one of the nice aspects of it is that we cannot really align judges at all times with the topic on the poster that is presented. And that teaches the students to communicate science to the public, which is a very important issue for scientists. Communicating science to policymakers and the public is one of the most important issues, for instance, in environmental research. So this is great for them, and provides this opportunity. And this year we had an additional tag on to this event, and we had a career workshop following. And before this, actually, we even have a poster workshop, so that those who are not very comfortable with presenting their results or who do it first time get help and guidance for how to do it. So as I said, this year we had collaboration with the career offices, and we brought in members from industry, representatives from industry, to speak about what career possibilities are there, how a CV or a resume should look, and students very much liked that. That was an additional perk. You know, you go to the conference, so you have some career advancement possibilities, or you can present yourself better. Another thing that we're sponsoring every year is an Outstanding Women in Science Speaker Series, one or two public lectures we present per year, and we strive to bring women in who are of broad interest to the campus community, whose research goes across disciplines. So 2 years ago, for instance, we brought in Cecina Hale from Caltech, who is actually an engineer. We don't have this on campus, but it was very, she's doing energy research, and it was interesting for the physics and chemistry community to see her. Additionally, we sponsor mentor-mentee networks on all levels of education, graduate, undergraduate, and faculty. Then research fellowships and grants are directly administered through OWA, but also OWA provides money into the departments for initiatives there. So I'm in a chemistry department. We have a Women in Chemistry initiative, and there we sponsor undergraduate research fellowships for the summer and travel grants for graduate and postdoctoral students and researchers. Also, we do lab tours for interested undergraduate students and also for the community, especially for high school students aspiring to pursue a career in the sciences or technology. And we do this once or twice yearly. And one of the most important things, I think, this is brand new for our program, is we created a STM, a Science, Technology, Math, Residential, Living and Learning community in Reed. So this is going online this year in fall. And we will provide 50 undergraduate students with the opportunity to network across disciplines, to have an environment in a residential hall that really provides them with hopefully everything they need to succeed in a science career.
Well, it seems like you take the support for students in the sciences and support them from many different dimensions. And I like how the last piece you just mentioned, even in their living situation, in their residence, they can have people to support and network with and learn about the language of science and how to best present that. So that's really wonderful to hear. Congratulations. That's a long list of projects and activities in one program. So very exciting to hear. One of the pieces you mentioned when you were talking about the Women in Science conference, this idea how important it is to connect the science to the public, how to convey that information and to have it perhaps even impact policy. How do you best support women in that way to be able to make that connection, to put themselves out there in that way?
To be honest, in the sciences, if you go to a typical science conference, there are not many opportunities. And this is why this conference that we are supporting is unique, because it doesn't only have your chemists and your biologists and so on in the corner. So they network and then, of course, when they have to present their results, they have to make that understandable and palatable for the novice, for the layperson. And that is one of the ways to do that. But other possibilities are, of course, also going into schools and mentoring, because at that point, if you have to present your science at a different education level, even for the interested science high school students, it is different than talking to your peers. So these are opportunities, and we really hope to help with this, because this is truly lacking in the sciences.
It sounds very important, so it's really nice to hear the work that you're doing in that way. And the career development piece was another one piece that you mentioned that I think is very impactful as well. So great. Well, keep up all the wonderful work. And in terms of the upcoming activities that the Women in Science program is planning, are there any, you had mentioned some public speaking series of women. Is there anything coming up soon?
It's not settled yet. We have an invitation out, so we cannot really announce this yet. But it's typically in fall that this lecture is happening, and we will see who is coming this year. But we have some very interesting people that we would like to bring on campus. And additional upcoming events are also, for instance, lab tours. That's also not happened so far. So we have a list that we're going down in the calendar year, trying to fit everybody's schedule.
Sure. That's always good, tricky business. Well, wonderful. And Yvette, I was wondering, we just have about a minute or so before we wrap up this first section. Do you have any reflections on the Women in Science program that you'd like to share?
Well, as Maren said, it's been an extremely important aspect of our work with faculty members. And I think that what's important to remember is that it's at a point now where it needs to continue to grow and move forward. So although we've reached a lot of success in developing new programs, the best thing to do is to keep enhancing it and moving that agenda forward, because it's not only important for Indiana University, but also for the world and for the United States especially.
Indeed. Great. So we're speaking with Yvette Alex Asenso and Maren Pink, both with the Office for Women's Affairs. We're going to take a brief break and come right back on Interchange.
Support for WFHB comes from Taste of India, a locally owned and operated restaurant featuring a lunch buffet 7 days a week with a variety of vegan and vegetarian options. Taste of India is located at 316 East 4th Street, next to the fire station. Dine in or call ahead for takeout or home delivery, 333-1399.
Welcome back to Interchange. We have, in the spirit of Women's History Month and the spirit of great service work being done at the university for the campus, our community, and beyond, we have Yvette Alex Asenso, who's the dean for the Office for Women's Affairs, and Meron Pink, who is the chair of the advisory board for the Women in Science program. So again, thank you for being here. We just, for those of you who are just tuning in, perhaps, we've just talked about the vision and some of the key programs and things that are going on for the Office for Women's Affairs at Indiana University. And now we're going to shift to talking about that further in a different direction slightly. I'm curious to hear, and perhaps Yvette, you could start responding for me. I know that the Office for Women's Affairs supports campus activity a lot, and you were briefly mentioning earlier in the city of Bloomington and Monroe County, the Status for Women, the Monroe County Commission, the Prosecutor's Office, and then some. Could you speak a little bit more specifically about what type of work, how do you help to educate or increase awareness about women's issues in Bloomington?
Sure. Well, the first thing that's important to realize is that we have a mechanism in the office that allows us to reach out to the community, and that's the Commission on Personal Safety. So it is through that lens or through that mechanism that the office works with the community, primarily focusing on educating the community about women with particular emphasis on health and safety concerns, especially with respect to sexual assault and building healthy relationships. So over the years, we have had a partnership with Middleway House. And in fact, Middleway House helps to train our Savant peer educators because they are a national model for preventing domestic violence. And so Toby Strout and her team of workers come over every year in the fall, and they work with our Savant peer educators to help them to understand what the best practices are in the research and in helping people who may be survivors, or in helping people to understand really what consent means, those kinds of things. And so that's the first way, this sort of relationship with an existing community organization that is nationally recognized. And in addition to that, our commission, we've also had a relationship, an ongoing relationship with the Commission on the Status of Women. And when I assumed the position in 2008, one of the things that we did was to enhance the majority report, which is our vehicle for informing the community about what's going on campus with respect to women. It's an annual publication, and to make sure that everyone understood the relationship or the importance of the community work, we had someone from the commission write an article about the work of the commission and OWA's relationship with the commission over the last several decades. And that's in our first majority report with a full sort of explanation of those ties. In addition to that, we have periodically had people from the office serving on the commission, and in fact, people who are on the commission now have had a historical relationship with the office, either serving as graduate students in the office when they were students at IU, or as undergraduate assistants working in the office, and so there is this healthy kind of relationship. Mm-hmm. The other organization that's sort of new is the Monroe County Commission on the Status of Women, and this year is the first year that the office has a relationship with that group, and I am serving on the commission this year basically to provide our office with an understanding of the work that they do, and hopefully then next year we'll have an opportunity to appoint someone from campus to serve on that commission. And the commissions are similar, but the Monroe County obviously covers the entire county, whereas the Bloomington focuses specifically on city issues. And so they're concerned about empowerment and facilitating opportunity inclusion for women and leadership, but in a countywide sense. So you have a diversity of issues to deal with. You have the urban and the rural. You have demographic differences, age differences, and all of those things. And so it's a really fascinating opportunity to hear about what's going on all over the county, and I really enjoy that work. The other thing that we do and have done historically is work to undermine or alleviate violence against women. And increasingly, that has moved beyond sexual assault, not that that problem has been solved, but because violence is increasing and morphing in different kinds of ways, especially aided and abetted by technology. So you have bullying via technology, and you have lots of stalking going on, and other kinds of things that require attention above and beyond sexual assault And again, sexual assault is extremely important. It's something historically that we do in the office, and much of the work that our savant peer educators do is focused on sexual assault. But we were recognized because of our additional work on bystander intervention. And what bystander intervention does is it says there are a plethora of issues out there that plague our society at large. Because what we believe is that if women are disproportionately affected, then society is disproportionately affected, considering the growing number of women in society, percentage-wise, and then also the increasing percentage of women in the workplace. And bystander intervention says everyone can be an ally. Everyone can be a partner in preventing any kind of issue that is problematic. So if you are standing at a party and you see someone pouring something into a punch bowl that's going to make everyone inebriated, or you see someone taking a woman who you know cannot give it consent up the stairs, there is a role that you can play as a bystander. And so bystander intervention teaches people how to involve themselves safely and productively in situations that intervene and then perhaps stop the situation from occurring. And so men are really, really empowered in these workshops because they say, you know, yeah, we see this kind of stuff going all the time, but we really don't know how to get involved or what to do. And bystander intervention says these are the kinds of things that you can do safely, just at the time that they are occurring to stop them and perhaps save someone's life in a variety of ways.
Wow, that is very powerful. As you were first starting to talk about it, the first thing I thought of was that is so empowering to hear about and to help people speak their truth when they have that validation behind them from this type of education.
And you know, I can say that I'm speaking from the Office for Women's Affairs, but all of this work occurs because we have such excellent people who are doing the work. For example, the Savant Peer Educators are students who give of their time and their energy to work, and they're led by Eric McCube, who oversees that program. And the work that Maren was talking about a few minutes ago, that's dedicated faculty members, that STEM floor. You know, Katrina Reynolds, the assistant dean, and the faculty across a variety of different departments, as Maren talked about earlier, really gave of their time and their energy to do this work. And so we are empowered to do the work because we have faculty members who believe in the work, who do the research and give it their time and the energy to see to move it forward. We can't do the work alone. And so we're happy for that kind of support in the community. And lastly, I would say that we've worked with the Monroe County Prosecutor's Office. I remember when the prosecutor was first working on the sexual assault nurse examiner program. He stopped by the office and talked to me about it, and we lent our support both in terms of resources, but also in spreading the word around campus to make sure that they had the university support in terms of this program. And the SANE nurse program is basically a sexual assault nurse educator program where nurses receive special training to help survivors. Some people call them victims. I like to call them survivors of sexual assault by collecting evidence and then using that evidence later to prosecute in cases of sexual assault. And the survivors have the opportunity to say, yes, I want to go forward, or no, but at least the evidence is collected just in case the person wants to move forward in terms of prosecution. And that's extremely important. And it's important to have someone who understands, who is delicate, who's sensitive to the issues that the women have been involved in, and can move forward with alacrity in collecting those data without obviously injuring people more.
I can really appreciate your reframing that, too, from a state of victimhood to a state of survival. It just brings a whole different way of looking at it and responding to it. So very powerful. Your work is very powerful, and it's just really great to hear about. Good to know it's going on. All right, so when I think about the Office of Women's Affairs, I recognize, and this is something I failed to mention in the last segment, that it started in the 1970s. So as you were saying about the people in the Bloomington community who have maybe formerly been affiliated with the office on campus as a student or in whatever capacity, the networking has had several decades to transpire and to develop into what it is today. And just wondering if you'd like to comment about what sort of perhaps changes you've seen. How long have you been a dean with the office?
Since 2008.
Okay, so you could definitely speak to that piece. And then even I'd be curious, you know, from your perceptions before that point in terms of the changes the office has developed.
Sure. Well, OWA really stands on the shoulders of giants when we think about the sacrifices that people have made so that office can exist. In 1972, you think about 1972, it was a really important year for women's issues, right? You have Title IX being passed at the same time. And in fact, if you hear Bert Bayh talking about this particular legislation, he talks about, because of his important role, he talks about the role of his wife and reminding him of the many opportunities that she missed because of her gender. And so he says all the time that she is the unsung heroine in that legislation.
Wow.
Because she reminded him and talked about the many times she was discriminated against because she was a woman and that he needed to do something about it. and so we really commend the many women and men who were allies decades ago in establishing this office, the original chancellor, who worked with a variety of women on campus through the Bloomington Faculty Council to establish this. So the history of OWA is not an easy history. It really is a path that has been paved by struggle and tears and I would say even bloodshed to some extent. And it's a history that needs to be revered and maintained. I'll also say that initially the office was established because women were not being treated fairly in terms of employment opportunities. They were not being paid at par with men. And the climate issues that they had to deal with were horrible. Just looking through the files and listening to some of them talk, we've had occasion to have women come back and say, talk about sort of that was then and this is now. And the things we take for granted as faculty and as staff and as students, these women did not have the opportunity to do that. And so we're just grateful for the deans who went before me, for all of the many things that they did. And it's what's important about women's history is that oftentimes it's not chronicled. And so the many ways that they've impressed and changed and influenced the system, those things have not been chronicled in ways that then bring credit back to the institutions that they've led. So it may have been a conversation or look at data or a report that they shared with a person in charge that then changed a policy or brought a new perspective into place. And so one never knows the real importance, but we do know that there are lots of policies and there are lots of programs and events that the university did not have, save for the Office of Women's Affairs. I hope that I haven't veered off the path
of
your question. So I would say that's extremely important. But in terms of things that have changed, obviously we have many more female faculty than we had in 1972. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so that's great, and I commend the university in that. And if you look at the Big Ten, IU is at the top of the Big Ten in terms of hiring women. What is sad, however, is that if you look at the distribution of where those women are, they still languish in the assistant professor ranks as opposed to the tenured and full professor ranks. And so someone may say, what difference does it make? They're all professors. Well, they are all professors, but in fact, full professors and professors with tenure really wield power and really have the impact of changing policy on campus. Assistant professors don't have tenure, and so they are busy trying to get tenure, do research, teach, and really can't control what's going on in policy. Okay, so if you think about it, what you really want is women who are empowered to make change. And if what you have here are lower numbers of women who have influence and authority, you may have more people in the door, but they're not seated at the table and they really can't make the kinds of contributions necessary to facilitate transformational change and sustainable change that needs to be done in the university. So great hats off to the university for hiring them, but we need to wonder what happens that they're not also making it to the top. Because if you have a higher record for bringing these women in, and then there is no change commensurate at the top, there's a question of attrition and the lack of retention and climate issues and all of those things then need to be changed. So we see some advancement in terms of bringing women in, but we see similar issues of climate, similar issues of leadership opportunities, questions about leadership opportunities available to women. Now, people might say, well, I mean, if you look at the provost, we've had, you know, we had our first female provost back in, what, 2007, 2006, something like that. And then we have another interim provost. And so, you know, there you go. But also, if we look at the deans who have been women, we can count them on one hand. And if we look at the vice presidents who have been women and not provosts, just vice presidents, not associate vice presidents, not assistant vice presidents, but vice presidents. If we look at the board of trustees, the people who ultimately make the decisions, we see a glaring gap in the existence of women. And that certainly is nothing to celebrate 4 years, 4 decades after 1972. So we are happy and we are proud of the many women who have served. Sue Talbot and Cora Bridge
I'm forgetting.
And in our current trustee, Ellen Bishop. But we also need to be mindful of making sure that other women have similar opportunities, both in being appointed by governors as well as being elected by, you know, by the student body.
Great, great. I think it's so important, you know, going back to the her story of the past and how the office has developed. And I really appreciate how you've acknowledged so many people. And there's just such a host of amazing individuals that have played such key parts and have really suffered and devoted a lot. So it's very inspiring to hear you put it into perspective for us. And so thank you for sharing. You seemed very inspired. So it was wonderful to hear. So there was an event that happened today. I'd like to spend a couple of minutes talking about that on campus, going from the past to the current day, present of today, Tuesday. And there was an author who spoke, Ellen Kosick, about her book, The CEO of Me, and helping to, how was the title here? Creating a Life That Works in the Flexible Job Age. So, you know, how do we balance, and she didn't use the word balance, she said harmonize the family and the work life. And I was in attendance, and Marin was in attendance as well. And Marin, I was wondering if you would share your insights about what struck you about that talk today.
It was more like a workshop. Ellen Kosick is a researcher at the University of Michigan, and it was a workshop intended for women to think about work-life balance and perhaps change their lives and get into control over work-life balance or family and work harmony, as she called it. Well, it was interesting. I had heard part of her talk before during an ICAR conference, and that is an initiative that Yvette started also several years ago, which brings different Indiana University campuses together. So today she was here to basically tell us who we are and what we must change in order to cope with work overload, family issues, children, partnerships, and how to get this all into your 24 hours during the day. And as an academic at the university, work typically is a large portion of your life, an overwhelming portion of your life, and you bring it home and you work late at night and you answer emails and your cell phone, which I don't have, but I have to say this. And family perhaps also spills over into your work hours. So this was discussed, and it was interesting how women took to that, how they affiliated themselves with a particular type of personality that I can't go into right now because that's too time involved, and shared their stories really in small groups, discussing what works for them, what they are unhappy with, why are they frustrated, and what could change in their life. So it was a very, very nicely attended, well-organized event for the women on campus to think about work-life balance. And I think it would be interesting also for anybody to, the book that was talked about is The CEO of Me, creating a life that works in a flexible job age. And there are many insights there. Research has gone on since then, and Ellen shared some new research results with us today. It's something interesting to look at if one has burnt out syndrome or feels overloaded with everything one has to do during the week. Yeah.
Great. And it also helps to create a language about all of these aspects of getting the work and family life in a way that brings us happiness. So
yeah,
great. Well, we're going to did you want to add one more thing, then we're going to take a quick break?
Yeah, so the nice thing about it was also to put very different women into this round, networking, discussing and commiserating and perhaps taking away advice from your peers and feel better, yeah, if you hear that other people suffer as much as you do. So, yeah.
Great. Good camaraderie. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we are just hearing from Marin Pink and Yvette Alex Asenso. You are tuned into Interchange. I'm Lisa Marie, your host this evening, and we will be back in a moment.
Support for WFHB comes from Bikesmith's Bicycle Shop, established in 1975. Bikesmith sells Cannondale and Giant bicycles, services all makes, and provides accessories. Open every day, a half a block south of the courthouse, and half a block east of the Beeline Trail at 112 South College is where you'll find Bikesmith's.
Good evening and welcome back to our third segment of Interchange this evening on WFHB. I'm Lisa Marie and I'm your host this evening. We have in the studio of WFHB the Dean from the Office for Women's Affairs, Yvette Alex Asenso, and the Chair of the Advisory Board for the Women in Science Program, Marin Pink. And again, thank you both for being here. If you're just tuning in, we started off talking a bit about the history of the Office of Women Affairs and establishing what work they do on campus in the Bloomington community and way beyond, and also some programs, activities, workshops, education, a lot of the amazing work that's been done, and just revisiting history a little bit. So now we're going to move on to the current day. We were just finished up the last segment talking about a workshop, speaking engagement that occurred today from the author. Her name is Alan Kosick for The CEO of Me, and it was sponsored by the IU Working Moms group or program. And Yvette, that strikes me as a very significant newer program that your office has, and I was wondering if you could share a few words about it.
Sure. Indiana University Working Moms is an excellent example of the way in which the office has spun off or given birth to, if you will.
That's a great metaphor.
Children are partners. And in this sense, it emerged about 2 years ago. And we were at OWA Fest, which is an opportunity for the office to basically display all of the different programs that it has. And Andy Gittleson, who is an advisor at the College of Arts and Sciences, said, you know, we need to sort of address these issues for working women, faculty and staff. And We need to make sure that people know what the resources are that the office facilitates, as well as the things that need to be done in terms of policies and what's going on in the community and all of that. And I said, wow, that's a wonderful idea. And the provost at the time, Karen Hansen, was at OFS, and you know, she said, I have to let my secretary know, or somebody in my office knew about this. This is great. And so it just emerged from there. And this group of women has done a marvelous job of infusing the campus with an awareness of their presence, that we are professionals who are competent in our jobs, but we're also working mothers. That's the other part of us. And so OWA has, the Office for Women's Affairs, has over the years sponsored various things. We have a babysitting list. And the interesting thing about that list is that men call for that list more than women.
That is interesting.
And they use that list when they need a babysitter, an emergency. And so we do background checks and you know, have times and names available and all of those things. And you can call the office and get it. And then we have lactation rooms. So our office was the first under Terry Dworkin to stimulate to have places all across campus where women could lactate and breastfeed. And some of them, obviously, you know, the husbands or their partners will bring babies to work and, you know, during their hour lunchtime, and they can lactate. But others pump in those rooms, and there's a refrigerator, rocking chair. It's pretty comfortable. What's been really neat is that OWA incubated the idea, but that other deans have picked it up and incorporated it as part of their duties and responsibilities, so that we have folks who are not asking OWA to pay them or help them with money, but that with planning and building, they're actually doing it themselves. And obviously with Peggy Welsh's legislation about breastfeeding and a place for that, it's only augmented it. But it's important to note that OWA was years ahead of that in terms of recognizing a need and providing it on campus. And so that's one of the things that IUWM does. But it also does workshops and lunch and learn sessions and just providing people with education about what are the interesting ideas or neat practices or products out there. And it's creating a sense of community and sharing that's really good, sort of group peer mentoring. At its best.
Fantastic. Yeah. Great. And wonderful for people listening who may be faculty or staff at IU to really understand, or students,
yes.
That, you know, there's this opportunities for a babysitting list or a lactation space. That's just very supportive and great to hear. So now this last section for today, I want to focus sort of on the bigger picture, since we have about 10, 12 minutes left here. In terms of what have been, we've talked about such a variety of initiatives and efforts that the Office for Women's Affairs makes. And I guess for you, Madden, I'm curious, with the WISP, the Women in Science program, what have been some of the challenges and rewards that you've experienced in the work that you've done through that program? And if you have any thoughts about that, and then also if that's at the larger level for the office, I'd be curious too. So, Madden, would you like to start with some of the challenges and rewards for the Women in Science program?
Sure. So, we feel that our conference is one of our biggest events and initiatives, and we have seen that over the past 3 years we have doubled attendance. So this is certainly a reward to see that more women are aware of this opportunity and take us up on it and present their work. Looking at the other programs that we have in place, the board has discussed at length that we feel programs are missing for postdocs. And so we are at the moment looking at funding opportunities to have a workshop, a career development workshop for postdocs, which in the sciences, which would provide them with tools to be the best in their interviews, to have also a good idea what's out there in terms of whether you want to go to academia, to a governmental lab, or into industry. So these workshops at other universities have been funded, for example, by the NSF, have proven to be very useful for the women. It's There is a university on the West Coast in Oregon which provides for the chemists and allied fields a coach workshop, it's called. And that is also career development, but in a smaller picture. It's something like that that we envision, and at the moment we are looking at funding opportunities. So this is what's in the future. Other than that, we hope to continue our projects, and we are, as I said before, very, very excited about our STEM floor at the residential not to be called dormitories, what are they called?
Residential living?
At Reed. Let's call it S3 so people know where it is. And we will assess and evaluate after the first year what we can see in terms of grade point average, satisfaction with the choice, and many different pointers and markers that we actually conducted a survey before we even went ahead and proposed this program, and we have a good idea where we were before and where we should go afterwards. This is one, I think, one of our most important projects right now. And as this project grows, we will also have much more peer mentoring on this floor, because at the moment we are inviting first years in and some older if they want to. But we hope to retain women in that floor and to become mentors for the younger incoming students. So this is a very, very big effort for us at the moment.
Great. Well, it's wonderful to have the mentoring in place so that different groups can move into and get the support that they need. So wonderful. Okay, thank you. And Yvette, how about you in terms of your office is vast and do a lot, but what are some of the things that stand out to you in terms of some of the challenges and, of course, the rewards in your work?
Sure. In terms of challenges, there's never enough money. That's sort of a mundane challenge, right? But there's never enough money to do all of the stuff that you want to do, especially with women, because women represent so many different aspects of our society, right? I mean, you know, if you look at the religious sector, if you look at the nationality sector, demographics, age, political ideology. So you have all of the, you have women, but you have such a diversity of women. And it's important for an office to represent those diverse needs. If you're talking about faculty, you have faculty in the arts and the humanities, mm-hmm. Which is an area that I think the office also needs to branch out to while continuing to support the women in science, which should be its priority. So the lack of money is something that I think needs to be attended to. And not only money, but resources in general, just other kinds of resources. But more importantly than the challenges are the rewards and the successes of the office. And I think that one of the benefits of being at a place like Indiana University is to just have such great human capital. The people at the institution are just wonderful in a variety of ways. And so working with them to help and to enhance and move them forward or move projects and programs forward, those things have been rewarding for us with our office, just being able to see the positive impact of tenure and promotion workshops when women come back and say, you know, I really learned X, Y, and Z, which helped me to prepare my dossier, and now I have tenure. Or, you know, my tenure case wasn't going too well, and I had to write an appeals letter, and you told me all along that it was a fair process and it would work out, and now on the other end, I see that. Or, you know, such and such was going on in this particular department, and your help with respect to that, the office's help with respect to that, has helped us to make it to the other side. Or with students, you know, I was really, I really didn't know how to talk to my teacher or my professor about this particular problem, and now with this advice and connecting me with student affairs or connecting me with the bursar's office or helping me to find the program in the graduate school to help me adjust to this particular issue. So it's that kind of work, connecting people with the resources that they need. And with an office, a name like the Office for Women's Affairs, it's a place where no matter what your problem, if you're a woman, mm-hmm. or no matter what your issue or challenge, you're going to come. That's the first place you're going to come, because it's the Office for Women's Affairs. And sometimes you've reached the right place. And other times we're connecting you with another place on campus. But at least that resource has been there for the last four decades to provide women with an access point to the institution, a place where they feel safe and they can provide their needs. And increasingly that's important, right? As you have workplaces that are changing demographically with more women in the workplace. And so looking at the broader science sort of issues, It's important to think about those kinds of policies, not only at Indiana University, the Bloomington campus, but the entire university. And so Myron was mentioning earlier the Indiana Coalition for the Advancement of Women, which is ICAW. And all of the deans or people in a similar position as I work together to address policy kinds of issues, access type of issues for women at Indiana University. And believe it or not, we also work with Purdue, the Boilermakers. And they've been great, great collaborators in understanding these issues. And
wonderful. Yeah. Good, very good. So we've talked a couple of times in vague terms about the importance, well, vague but broad, I should say, terms about the importance of the work that the Office for Women's Affairs is doing beyond the Bloomington community and for the nation and for the world, really. And I think about how many women's issues are in the public light that are so huge these days with, I mean, you have everything from sort of Rush Limbaugh's comments to, you know, some legislation about ultrasound testing with a probing device. I mean, I could just go on. And even the candidates are talking about it in a lot of the election debates. So I'm just kind of curious about the office's work with OWA, I should say, as you say. With the advocacy work, I mean, I see that it's very much educational and preventive for violence and assault and all of that, but I just wondering if you had any comments about that sort of larger public level regarding women's issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as I mentioned before, our office is the Office for Women's Affairs, and women come with all kinds of political persuasions and ideologies. And so we see our mission not to advance a particular perspective, although we definitely have that perspective, but to empower women to give voice and to participate at a variety of levels. And we do that because in the office we have Republicans, independents, and Democrats. We have folks who are apolitical and don't believe in the political process. Ban the thought, you know, as a political scientist, but we do have those. And right, there's room for all of us in America. And so a while back, when I first came into the office, we established the Women of Vision. And Women of Vision is an organization or a group that we have that empowers women to be leaders. If you look at the statistics on women at IU who have held the post of president of the SGA, or the student government, I think that there have only been four or five in the last, I mean, since IU started having presidents of the SGA. Yet since 1972, women have been in the majority. So the question is this mismatch between the majority status of women on campus and their lack of political leadership as evinced by representation at this level. So the first step is to, first of all, if I have a position to peddle, and that position is that you should be articulate in espousing your particular view. Whether it is, you know, X or Y. And so through the Women of Vision and through our work with WSA, we help women to become empowered and to participate in the political system and to represent their views in that way, whether it's writing an article or voting or demonstrating or protesting, those kinds of things.
Fantastic. Great. Well, I think that's a wonderful note to close on. We have about a minute left if anybody has a thought to close about your office or anything to share. For people who are interested in more information, I assume they could just go to the Indiana University website and look up the Office for Women's Affairs and find a host of information there. Any other closing thoughts? Or?
Well, again, I just thank you for inviting us on to have
thank
some
you.
Words
and
to say.
And to Lewis as well. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lewis.
Yes, and also to everyone in the community, both the Bloomington community and the larger community who have worked hard to support the office and the work of women, because that basically is the bottom line of what we do, empowering women, facilitating gender equity. And I forgot the name of the trustee. It's Cora Smith Breckenridge.
Thank you. Sorry we couldn't help you out there. So thank you again to, we just heard the voice of Yvette Alex Asenso, the Dean of the Office for Women's Affairs, and Meriden Pink is with us, also the Chair of the Advisory Board for the Women in Science Program. It's been a joy and wonderfully enlightening program tonight. I appreciate your time, energy, and insights, and all of your great work. So thank you again. And thanks to our assistant producer, Shane Young, for engineering tonight's program. Interchange is produced by Lewis Malone. The Executive Director is Allison Bechtish. original theme music by Jamil Effiam. Stay tuned for Stardust with Tillman coming up next on WFHB. This is Lisa Marie, and I wish you a good night.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers working in the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
Interchange fosters unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Comments, suggestions, and program ideas may be sent directly to the Interchange staff.
The email address is news@wfhb.org.
That address once again is news@wfhb.org.